Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company. From seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The quarter ends on a relative high note. Banks get the green light from the Fed. China-U.S. trade deal talks restart. And our guest today is Taylor Lemby from M31 Capital. All this and much more on episode number 618 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And a great day to you. Happy almost July. This is Andrew Horowitz. I'm president and founder of Horowitz & Company. You know, the place where we help people like you with their money, investing, planning. That's what we're here for. But we also do a few different podcasts. This podcast each and every week. And having some great guests on. Also on Tuesdays with John C. Dvorak. I'm a co-host on DH Unplugged, where we cover the lighter side of finance. A whole different way of looking at things. So I really encourage you to check that out. It's a fun show. It really is. It really is a fun show. So, well, here we are. June is just about over. And you know, it was the best June in, I don't know, 50 years. Coming off a pretty lousy May, of course. But when we could say that it's the best June in 50 years, the market's up like 6% on the U.S. domestic side. Pretty impressive overall, you know, even considering the fact that we have all these headwinds, you know, between trade wars, worry about earnings, the fact that interest rates, well, they're going down, but yet Powell comes back and he says, well, maybe we're not going to be reducing them that much. And just all the geopolitical issues that are going on in areas like the Middle East and just incredible amount of resiliency. You have to admit that. Whether you're a bull, you're a bear, whether you're not in the markets, whether you're just sitting on the sidelines, I mean, come on. This has been a majorly resilient market. A lot of it, yes, has to do with the fact that the Fed has been oh so kind and has been showing us a lot of love right now when it comes to the markets by talking up the fact they're going to be reducing rates or at least holding off on rate cuts, changing their status and structure and looking out towards the potential problems that are out there and saying pretty much, hey, you know what? We got your back. Don't worry. Rates are going to come down. We're going to add liquidity to the system. We're no longer in a tightening cycle anymore. That is the essence of what the Fed has been talking about. There's a lot of people out there that still, though, disbelieve. And I'm not saying you should be a believer, but let's just look where prices are. I mean, we're almost at all-time highs again. We're seeing that stocks have been rallying incredibly, especially those in the area of technology recently, in the face of the potential for retribution or retaliation by the Chinese against our tech companies. And, you know, I had, two or three different discussions this week, just out of the blue, just discussions. I had one with a client. I had one with some friends, and there was somebody else I was talking to. And they were all talking about how, you know, hey, you know, there's a lot of artificial stuff in the market right now, and I don't buy it. I don't believe it. I'm not going to be invested in this. And I said to him, what is it that you don't believe? What is it that, well, we're going to have a crash. Okay. When? Well, I don't know, but prices are too high. Well, compared to what? Well, you know, they just seem really high. Look at these prices. And I agree with them to a degree that there is some froth in the markets. There's no question about the fact that we are seeing an incredible amount of excess. I mean, look at the IPO market as a great example. See another stock on Friday, a biotech open up 40% gain on the first day. Seeing companies with no earnings skyrocket. So there's definitely some froth in the markets. There's no question about that. The problem is that overbought situations can last a long period of time. And if you're not set up for it, if you're just looking for that pullback, here's what's going to happen. And let me preface this all by saying, I am not by any means saying I am bullish. I am not saying you should be in the markets right now, but I want to give you a little bit of market psychology or a little help here to kind of set you straight, to help you out with some of these negative feelings that you may be having, because those probably persist in all sorts of market conditions. And I want to make sure that you're profitable, that you're making money, and then you have a good and a very successful investment portfolio and, you know, retirement and college planning and whatever else it is that you're planning for. Here's the deal. If you are in the camp where you are saying, hey, you know, markets are frothy, markets are hot, markets are artificial, I'm not getting into it, I'm not buying this, I'm waiting for that pullback. And what happens is that pullback happens. Are you prepared? Seriously, are you ready and are you going to pull the trigger? I mean, are we talking about a short pullback, a long pullback, a deep pullback, a shallow pullback? What are we talking about here? If we get a shallow pullback, will you add a little bit? Or are you going to say, you know what? At that time, I knew it. I was right. And then what do you do? I think it's going lower. I'm not investing now. Look, finally, people are agreeing with me. Finally, the market has come to its senses. And what do? Nothing. All right. So it pulls back a little bit more. And then all of a sudden you say, well, now we got a 10% correction on our hands. This is looking like it's pretty intense. This is looking like the possibility that we're going to see a lot more downside here. I'm not investing. And you go through this cycle and this kind of self-talk and this kind of, well, maybe I'll get in. And then the market starts moving up. So now we're down 15%. Market starts moving up. It's down. It's up 2%, 3% over a couple of weeks, let's say. Comes back a little bit, but goes back up. And now you're saying, you know what? I think this is a false move to the upside. I mean, have you, you know what I'm talking about? Does this sound familiar? We all have this happen. But what I'm going to tell you is, are you looking to invest for tomorrow, next week, 6 months from now? Or is it a long-term prospect that you're investing with? And if you have a 10 or 15-year time horizon, why are you worried about the interim movement of the market that really is just noise if you kind of spread it out over time? Step back. If you're looking at charts and you're looking at kind of where we are and you see that vertical move and you see that kind of that daily or that maybe even 30-minute or 60-minute chart, do yourself a favor. Reset it. Set it to weekly. Set it to monthly. Then take a look and see how we are poised right now. And those drops and those pops, are they really as significant as you're seeing when you're looking at them so closely? You need to step away. Get some perspective. So, well, again, I'm not saying that this is a time to invest necessarily or to sell. That's your decision. What I'm telling you is at least having a, first of all, a plan. Second of all, when you do see something happen according to your plan, you execute. So write it down and then execute on it. No questions. And realize that if you have a long-term plan and a long-term time horizon, I should say, then a lot of this noise means nothing. If you're one of those that has to look at your statement every 5 minutes, well, you're probably not a successful investor. Buy those companies, buy those positions, ETFs, mutual funds, whatever it is. And for goodness sakes, diversify. That's the whole part of the process that a lot of people overlook and get wrong. One of the things that we do on a regular basis here is look at where is our diversification and how much exposure we have to certain areas that may be frothy and therefore maybe pull that back, but still keep a little bit in there because you don't know exactly when that's going to play out. Now, again, our TDI managed growth strategy is a much greater trade. It's a much more active trading strategy than, let's say, our Investology or global allocations. Different strokes for different folks. Those that want longer term returns that are diversified and that don't have the exposure directly to markets and individual securities are not going to go into a long-short strategy. Those that want active trading, that want to have some shorting opportunities, that want to have some hedging, are going to go into the TDI managed growth strategy. Investology, broad-based, diversified. So it all depends on what your circumstance is, but do yourself a favor. Pick something. Because in order to win the game, you have to play. If you're standing on the sidelines the whole time, you will never get that trophy. And if you want at least maybe a plaque, maybe a little, you know, a little smiley face sticker, you gotta play. So if you find yourself paralyzed, stuck, not able to do anything because you just think that markets are frothy and just, you know, out of control, rethink it. And if you want, by the way, if you want a little ear to listen to you and kind of talk you through some of this and maybe give you some things to think about, you can always contact me. You can go to Ask Andrew on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. It's right there on the top. You can just call me, whatever you want. I'll be happy to chat, talk through email, whatever you want, and walk you through some of this concern that you may have and what you can do about it to better yourself and better your portfolio. But don't be sitting on the sidelines, tapping your foot, being the one that doesn't get picked, being the one that's not in the game, and then never winning. That's just not a good way to play. Not a good way to play in life. All right, let's switch gears here and talk about what's happening with regard to Washington and the markets, because that's one of the things that really is going in, is really playing into how the markets are working right now, because we have a very favorable condition from fiscal and monetary policy. In fact, going into the G20 meeting this weekend, there was some comment out of the White House and an acknowledgement that there was a significant amount of understanding that the markets are very sensitive to this. And as Donald Trump, the president, views the market as a benchmark for his general performance, well, he understands this going into it. So we're going to see this throughout the election process. It's going to heat up significantly from all aspects of all those that are running. It's going to be a lot of promises, maybe some call it bribes. But be sure that we'll see a lot more over the next few months when it comes to rhetoric about things like, I don't know, a capital gains tax cut or stringing us along on the trade war. And in fact, when you're speaking about the trade war, you know, over the weekend we had a kind of a detente, a meeting, a variety of meetings, but between U.S. and China. President Trump met with President Xi. And over the weekend we see these headlines that there's going to be a slowdown in this whole idea of this, you know, the worry about the trade war. And there's going to be a, what do they call it? It's not a ceasefire, but it's a trade truce. I'm not exactly understanding what's going on. We have this concern about Huawei, the Chinese technology firm, and a national security threat and all these problems. And meanwhile, now we're going after and saying, you know what? It's okay. U.S. companies can now do business again. And of course, China's going to be buying lots of agricultural products. I don't understand why we're letting companies work with Huawei if they're a national security threat. Giving them our technology, it makes absolutely no sense. And this trade truce, what does that mean? What's a truce? I mean, the definition is an agreement between enemies or opponents to stop fighting or arguing for a certain period of time. We're still arguing over trade. I mean, what they're making it sound like is there's tariffs are gone and there's a full stop of where it was. I mean, like kind of like no more bombs, no more shelling. Everything is stopping until we can get through this and talk through it. But nothing's changed. I mean, what's changed? There's no ceasefire. Essentially, we're still bombarding their goods with tariffs, bombs in the form of tariffs. They're bombarding our goods with tariffs. There's no ceasefire. I don't see it. I mean, the bottom line to me is it's all nonsense. It's with the intent to help markets get risk assets are up. Already you're seeing headlines all over the place over the weekend that this will be good for risk assets. Like, risk assets are stupid. I mean, which they may be. I mean, the idea that people will put money into the markets now because there's this trade truce. It's not a truce. But you know what? Even so, I'm sure markets will get a lift from this, at least initially, because markets have been seeing the silver lining for the whole past, I would say, six months. But we do have earnings season that's coming up right around the corner, and we're probably going to see some of the higher cost of these tariffs that are going to be associated with that embedded already. It's going to be start to show up at this, I would believe, in this quarter. There's no reason why it shouldn't. Now, what do we have coming ahead? We have a short week. It's July 4th. Woo! July 4th right around the corner. That happens on a Thursday. That means on Friday, probably very thin trading. Going to take a four-day holiday. But there's plenty of eco news that could possibly move the markets on top of the fact that we saw this truce, this trade truce, which is nonsense. But nonetheless, we have in a short week with one day missing, Friday markets will be open. In fact, we have a pretty important thing happening. We have the payroll numbers coming out the first Friday of the month. That happens on Friday, this Friday coming up. And with a light day in terms of volume, a lot of people on vacation, could be really interesting. Expectations of that last month's surprise number to the low end, to the downside, was a simple aberration. It was weather-related, it was weird, and that this month the estimates are adding about 180,000 jobs, right back to where we were with the unemployment rate sticking at about 3.6%. We're going to be seeing manufacturing numbers, auto sales, ISM services, factory orders this week, so it should be pretty interesting to really get a real good read-through on what's going on with the economy. And, of course, you have to remember something. This is really important. That every number that comes out right now, you have to look at and understand it's being looked at through the prism of what the Fed's going to do. How is the Fed going to react to this? If it's a weak number, kind of good. If it's a strong number, hey, we do, it's good. If it's too strong, oh my, the Fed may not cut. So you have to really consider that when we're going to see all these numbers come out. With that, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, you want to tell me anything you want, getting something off your chest, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Click on the Ask Andrew button. You can also find the replay of the Investology webinar. That's available. That was a really cool webinar we did last week or so. So check that all out. And you can find out more about how to work with us. We'd like to work with you. Yes, we would. I would personally like to work with you. So if you want to work with me, you know what? Just say, hey, Andrew, how can we work together? Write me a note. Let's get it going. Time for our guest. Let's do it. And our guest today is Taylor Lemby. He's the CEO of M31 Capital. He's been in the real estate business for over 20 years, and he's been in all aspects from construction, development, property management, investment, real estate technology. And what we're going to really focus on today is the idea and the concept and the kind of the latest thing that's really been pretty hot these days is opportunity zones. And if you haven't heard about these, well, we're going to get into this because it's been pretty interesting to understand more about. Taylor, how are you?
Doing great. Hey, Andrew, nice to meet you. Look forward to our conversation.
Yeah, there's so much going on in the world of this whole opportunity zone. So I thought we would start the discussion to make sure everybody is on the same page with us of what exactly is this whole idea of an opportunity zone.
Sure. Yeah. So a general overview of opportunity zones are there's certain census tracts throughout the country that the government designated as needing additional capital resources. Those capital resources come from investors with capital gains. That's a really important aspect, is that the max tax benefit to the investor is treated on capital gains, not on cash. So the investment needs to be made through a capital gains reinvestment into funds such as our Morpheus Fund. And the main benefits are that the investor defers their initial tax gain until December 2026. During the term of the investment, which is a 10-year term, after year five, they receive a 10% tax basis increase on that original initial gain. And then at year seven, they receive an additional 5% tax basis increase. So their original gain goes down. And then the most important aspect is after the 10-year term, any profit or gain during that investment period is tax-free once the assets are sold.
All right, let's back up. Hold on. Let me bring you in here a little bit. Let's start with and explain the very basics. Not of an opportunity fund. That's different for a second. An opportunity zone fund. Let's talk about an opportunity zone and explain what that's about.
So it's a certain census tract within, you know, so for us in San Francisco Bay Area, there's designated census tracts in the Bay Area that are designated by the governor that allows for this investment to be made into those areas. And so as long as the investment is being made into those designated census tracts, I believe there's 8,700 across the country. It qualifies, there's other requirements, but it qualifies as an opportunity zone investment. And the idea is that these are areas with, you know, within the country that need some capital infusion, that need some redevelopment, that need, you know, some capital to kind of spur growth within those areas.
I mean, essentially, for the most part, they're blight zones. These are areas that people would not say, hey, you know what, I'm spending all sorts of money to build that app, because the question is whether there's going to be any opportunity for them to get any business from it, right? These are places that you're in your normal course of business, it wouldn't be tagged as, hey, that's a great area for me to open up a business right now. Would you agree with that?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think the intent is to get businesses opening in these areas, but if you look at the map, you know, if investors or fund managers look at the map, you know, there's certain areas throughout the country. By example, Hollywood and Vine in Los Angeles is an area. Scottsdale, Arizona is an area. The portion of the investment zones that we're looking at are in the Bay Area. It's areas that we've invested over the years. You know, Oakland, California, Hayward, California, San Jose, California, parts of San Francisco. There are areas for improvement in these locations. You know, sometimes there's vacant lots of land or there's buildings that haven't been renovated in many years, or there's just not a lot of business going on. But, you know, they kind of run the gamut of investment potential.
Right, because what I'm seeing here in the Fort Lauderdale area in Florida and South Florida is pretty much a lot of the properties are, let's just say, next to train tracks, or they're in areas that have been not developed for one reason or the other, or they're areas that, you know, houses and the property values are low as compared to other areas in a reasonable distance to where they are. And, you know, what I found is that what's interesting is what happens is once they get named as an opportunity zone, those housing prices have been going up substantially. Have you noticed that?
So in our area, I think that's the intent of the program, is that they're in areas that, you know, maybe border other neighborhoods that have gone through revitalization, and they're just trying to expand those zones. We haven't really seen a massive increase in prices in the Bay Area, because the real estate market and economy, generally speaking, is doing really well right now, regardless. And having to kind of fit within the opportunity zone structure, only certain product types fit the requirements, because you have to spend a certain amount on the capital improvement of the buildings. So it works really well with ground up development, because your basis is so low, right? And so it works out to be about 65% of the acquisition cost that you have to spend on redeveloping or developing the property. Our main thesis is that we would be acquiring existing properties, so not ground up development. And it would be properties that have a fair amount of vacancy already in the building. And those units that are vacant are ones that need substantial, you know, rehab to the units and to the structure of the property and to the common areas. So that we can match that spend that's required under the regulations.
And is there a requirement for a certain amount of employees to be employed in that particular area? These are not residential, right? These are businesses.
No. So there's two types of investment. So one is real estate and one is business. So we're not investing into businesses directly. Mm-hmm. That's where the number of employee requirement right. comes into play.
Right.
We're investing into real estate. So there's no requirement as far as, you know, what contractors you're using or employing people within the actual property. We would use local contractors and that kind of thing. That's solely for investment in business.
So now let's get back to what you were talking about a second ago, because obviously anybody could technically do this if they want to do a one-off deal. They can either do on the business side, or they could possibly do it on the real estate side. But there are now these opportunity zone funds, which allow for an even better opportunity, no pun intended there, with regard to how you get your money in. Now, I didn't know that you couldn't fund it with cash. I didn't realize that an opportunity zone fund could only be funded with property, we'll call it, right? Stocks or some other property that you put in there as an exchange. That's the only way?
It's funded by capital gains. You can invest cash. You just don't get the tax treatment. And so you can invest cash if you like the investment, right? Just as a straight up, in our world, real estate investment. But really, the main trigger is that you're reinvesting capital gains in order to, number one, it's a sound investment, but number two, get the beneficial tax treatment.
So you could do this with stocks. You could do this with other property, gains from other property, yeah. right? And then when you transfer it in,
So what I was going to say is a lot of our investors are selling stock and then reinvesting the gains. You can sell property. It's not through a 1031 exchange, which mm-hmm. is kind of the normal route that real estate investors use exchanges with. You actually receive the money back. So when you sell property A, you get your money back, and then you could take your original basis out of the gain on the property, as long as you're rolling the capital gains into an opportunity zone. There's something called a no tracing rule, which just means that, like, unlike an exchange where you have to put it with an accommodator, with opportunity zones, you don't have to. You just put it into your bank account and just make sure that you roll the gains into the opportunity zone investment.
And then you get this beneficial tax treatment long-term. So basically, to get the most out of it, you have to sit in this or at least invest in this for 10 years. So how does an individual go about figuring out if it's going to be, you know, why they would do this? In other words, so I have a stock, it's highly appreciated, I want to take some off the table. And by putting it into the rolling the capital gains and the amount of money into the opportunity zone fund, I have to sort of think that one of two things. One, well, the stock maybe have reached some potential. Number two, I want diversification, and this is a good way to do it to real estate. But also, I have to wonder to myself, is this going to be a better investment long-term net of all the tax benefits, right, than it would be if I kept the money in the stock itself?
Correct. Yeah.
So, I mean, how do you go about doing that?
A lot of our investors aren't in real estate, right? They're looking for diversification. They are probably investing in the stock market, or they have a business and maybe they're looking to sell all or part of the business. And so what's great about the opportunity zone structure is that normally when they're investing with us on other real estate deals, they would sell off the stock, they would get, you know, full tax bill on that gain. With this, they could sell the stock, they could, you know, pull back their original basis, they could take their gain, and they could reinvest it into opportunity zone through us. And then across those 10 years, there was a recent revision to the regulations which allowed for sale of property within 10 years mm-hmm. and also refinance a property within 10 years, which really kind of opened up potential for investors or fund managers to acquire assets and within that 10-year period sell off or refinance those properties and then redeploy the capital. Mm-hmm. Whereas before, they were saying that you'd have to hold those original assets for 10 years and then sell the entire portfolio at the 10-year mark or after, which was really problematic. But the recent revisions really open this up so that it's more like a traditional real estate investment, so that you're not really, you're still held to that 10-year investment period, but you're not held to those original assets that you acquire with the first round of funding.
Back in 2005, 2006, 2007, there was the CRA and there was a lot of lending going on to people who maybe not only through CRA, of course, but there was lending going on and real estate property being built with people that really probably didn't have the means or the desire to or ability long term to really pay for this mortgage. But it didn't matter. It was being pushed down the throats of banks that they had to do a certain amount of lending to certain areas, right? And fast forward, that's been a lot, cleaned up. The securitization issue, which was no longer around, starting to crop up again. And now we have an incredible amount of, valuation enhancement over the last 10 years on real estate. You know, a lot of places around the country have seen a full and complete, restitution of their former high prices on properties, and it's even above that point in a lot of places. And I do wonder, does this at all feed into the potential for overbuilding in areas that maybe not in your exact area, okay? But I'm talking about outside of that. Does it feed into the whole idea that maybe it creates additional risk in the real estate market on areas that are just going to fail and there's just too much being built?
I think it could. It definitely could. That's why we're very specific on the market we're investing in. But I would just caution any investors looking at this, really, research and know who you're investing with, research the sponsor, make sure they have a lot of experience, make sure you understand the properties or the businesses that you're investing into, because a 10-year term, it's a long horizon, right? I mean, it's something where you have to really understand the market that you're investing into and really trust the sponsor and the group that you're putting your money with. And so, to go back to your original question, I think so. I mean, certain areas obviously need additional housing, the Bay Area being probably number one. But there's other areas that it could lead to being overbuilt, oversupply, and housing prices are in most areas at an all-time high right now. So I would just tell investors to proceed with caution.
Yeah, because I'll tell you, I can only look out my window, and I could tell you in Fort Lauderdale, there was an area that was, we call it a blight area. It was an area that just would not hold any property values, and for very good reason, frankly. And it's in the kind of areas that you don't want to go through. It's just a little bit of a troubled area. And all of a sudden, it was named an opportunity zone, and then you saw this fight for property. One guy held out for a house on a corner that was going to be the last piece of the puzzle in this one particular property development of a high rise, and smart on his part. Everybody else got $180,000 for the house or, $120,000 for their house. He got $550,000 because without his property, they couldn't. Yeah. That's great. Good for him. Really, seriously, good for him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, my in-laws live in Florida, and so I know that market pretty well. I think there are things like that going on. Hopefully that investor that's buying that house, is a particular piece of land that fit into his puzzle, and I guess he was underwriting it that way. I don't know enough about the project to speak intelligently about it, but there's probably some of that going on, right? And for people that are, own the land right now or the house, if they're holding it off, they might be getting a little bit overbid on it.
So who's the perfect investor for this? This is an accredited investor that can invest in many of these opportunity zone funds, right?
Accredited investor, that obviously has capital gains to be reinvested into the fund. We like to see that people have some experience investing in real estate. Many of our investors have invested with us over time, so they understand what our business plan is and have done quite well over the years. But some of the new investors that are coming to us, there's a little bit of education on opportunity zone stuff. Some of it, has gone through recent revision. And so if you asked me 6 months ago, some of these questions, the answer would probably be, well, we don't know exactly right now, but in a few months, we'll get the revised regs. And now some of that has been cleaned up. And probably there'll be some more cleaning up to do, but the regs as they stand right now have pretty clear direction on what needs to get done.
And so at the end of this period, at the end of the 10-year period, what happens?
So another kind of misconception of the 10-year period is you don't necessarily have to sell on, 10-year and one day. There was some questions or chatter about, well, that's going to create a mass amount of properties that hit the market, and that's going to create, oversupply as it relates to the sales market. Not the case. So, we would look at the 10-year mark to exit the entire fund, but it doesn't mean that we have to sell right on that date or right after. We would look at what is the most beneficial to investors and decide on the asset by asset basis which ones to sell off.
I'm sorry, but doesn't that lead us into liquidity issues like during the period? What's the liquidity during that period?
During the 10-year period?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can refinance properties and you can return the original investment to the investors. So if it's a refinance scenario, they could get back their original investment. If it's a sale, you can, for lack of a better way to put it, exchange back into an opportunity zone.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the main benefit is that the money stays in these zones or a zone for 10 years, right? And so where the, I guess the neighborhood or the community help comes into play. But the recent regulations, a very important aspect was you can get the money back to the investor because they do have a tax bill in 2026, albeit one that's been reduced. And they could take that money back and reinvest it elsewhere. Or if it's a sale event, then you could exchange it back into the opportunity zones. A main component of it. Go ahead.
I was going to say that I would think that with these benefits and with people desirous of diversifying, it should be a relatively easy job of, the process is different, but a relatively easy job of getting commitments to capital to get the fund going. Am I wrong about this?
Using us as an example, we launched our fund a little over 2 months ago. We're about 70% committed to the total raise. Our raise is smaller than other like massive funds. We're raising $25 million. There's some funds that are out there that are $500 million, $1 billion. Ours is very, very targeted. It's very specific to the Bay Area. And that's all done on purpose because that's where our expertise is. That's where we have a lot of relationships where we get access to deals that aren't widely marketed.
Right.
We get access to deals that need some capital infusion, get access to deals that fit this program. The other aspect of it is that roughly 35% of it, of the total raise or the total investment can be invested anywhere. So 65% of it has to go into the opportunity zones. At roughly 35% could be invested in, non-opportunity zone locations.
Yeah.
So that's kind of an interesting and a nice way to diversify as far as the opportunity zone, portion is concerned.
So let's talk about the real estate market in general for a second. So you're in the San Francisco Bay mm-hmm. Area, and obviously we know there's a really hot area, if not too hot. And we've seen interest rates move up towards the end of last year significantly and then just, turn around just as significantly in the beginning of this year. Do you feel the real estate market is in, kind of a last phase of this incredible uptrend that we've had? We recently saw the Case-Shiller numbers on the 20 city. I think it was at 2.9% year over year. So we're still seeing growth in that area. Just anecdotally, I'm seeing a lot more higher-end properties sit on the market for a very long period of time and a lot of mm-hmm. construction, a lot of new properties going up at the same time. So are we starting to see a little bit around the country pockets of areas that maybe there's a cycle that's reaching its peak?
Yeah. You hear it's the 9th, the 10th, the 11th inning, right? I would think on ground-up development, specifically in the Bay Area, land is probably overpriced at this point. That's why we're staying away from that right now. Certainly construction costs have skyrocketed. Another reason why we're staying away from it. I think that with this kind of bouncing around of interest rates, you know, right now money is so cheap that there's still money coming into these markets. Mm-hmm. But I think the rates will probably bounce back up. And I think that as it relates to not just opportunity zones, but real estate in general, there's probably going to be some pretty good opportunities over the next, you know, year to 18 months, where pricing probably will come back down to relatively normal. Specifically in the Bay Area, there's such a housing shortage that we don't think that there's going to be a massive crash like there was in 2008. But I think that there is going to be somewhat softening in pricing over the next 24 months, which for us as real estate investors means opportunity, right? I mean, it's something where we track properties across, it could be as little as a couple months or, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. And that's why, you know, our investment isn't, we're not going to other states and other cities where, you know, maybe some of the zones are a little bit better, at least on its face. And maybe less competitive, but we just don't have the experience in those locations.
Right.
And so I would be extremely cautious of, like, if we were raising a fund and flying out to Florida to invest in a market that we've never been in. Mm-hmm. You know, these are properties that we've looked at over the years, meaning many, many years. And now the seller's just ready to sell them.
Yeah, interesting. Good stuff. Well, I appreciate you coming on and giving us an education on the real estate markets, opportunity zones, opportunity zone funds. Taylor Lemby from M31 Capital. We'll make sure to put all the information on how to get in touch with you and all the information on how they can, the listeners can find out more about, you know, what exactly is this whole opportunity zone thing, which I bet a lot of them haven't really understood over on The Disciplined Investor for episode 618. So thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Andrew.
All right. So there you have it. A little bit on real estate. I think this idea is pretty interesting. I mean, it may not be for everybody, this whole opportunity zones, but knowledge of it's pretty, I think helpful to understand what's going on in some of these areas that you see all the cranes. And you're like, why are they building there? Well, you got a great tax credit, a benefit, and you have a lot of money pouring in because of the fact that you can pretty much defer capital gains on some of this. So, you know, like on your stocks, you have some big capital gains. And think about it. You have an executive at, you know, whatever company, and he's got a very low basis in the stock. He's been there for a very long time in a publicly traded company. Now he could diversify really in a pretty smart way. Right, he could push his money over here, defer for a period of time, and depending on how long they keep it and how long it's involved, you can pretty much take that capital gains down significantly. And in some situations, pretty much wipe it down all the way down. So, interesting. I would encourage you to seek out professional tax advice, your CPA, when it comes to this, to see if this is something that you want to get involved in. Obviously, there's a lot of moving parts here, but something you really should check out if you meet the criteria and if you're looking to invest in real estate in these areas and maybe you need some kind of tax break on capital gains for low basis stocks. Just something to check out. All right, that brings us to the end of the show. Thanks so much for joining me today and each and every week. You can find us, of course, on any podcast directory that's out there, whether it's Stitcher, whether it's iTunes, anywhere out there. Of course, if you do have some desire to check out some really cool trading webinars every Friday through Trigger Charts. We do a trading webinar where you're going to see my screen. You're going to see exactly what's going on. We take your names and symbols, and we take a look at those, as well as a recap live of what's going on during the day, during the week, last week, and next week. So it's all there. Quick half hour in the morning, 9 o'clock in the morning. You can sign up for it over on TriggerCharts.com or on The Disciplined Investor, wherever you want. Go check it out. Thanks for joining me. Have a wonderful, a fantastic, a stupendous 4th of July. You deserve it. Have a great time with your family. I will see you after, well, I'm going to see you, I guess, just a couple of days after the 4th. It'll be good. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions. nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.